had a very interesting thought, which I think is very, very powerful. He said, all right, they have this custom, this Jewish custom of burning together with the chometz, the feather, the spoon, and the candle. I understand, he says, why you burn the feather. Because the feather came in contact with the chometz. The feather is used to sweep the chometz from the platform that you found it on onto the wooden spoon. So the feather came into contact with the chometz, you burn the feather. Understand why you burn the wooden spoon, because that also came into contact with chometz. But why do you burn the candle? The candle's a perfectly good candle. You could use it the next year to search for chometz. You could use it on Pesach. It never came into contact with the chometz directly. You just use it to search. So why do we burn that too? And he said an interesting thing. What's the candle? The candle is an instrument to search out chometz. Chometz symbolizes faults, defects, blemishes, averos that we did. One is supposed to search inside oneself for one's faults, but one is not supposed to search someone else to find out that person's faults. That's not what you're supposed to do. The candle is involved in the process of searching out the faults that are out there. And therefore, you do it once because you have to do it, but afterwards, you burn it. Looking for someone else's faults is not something to be done. So therefore, this candle, which was used to search out faults, is itself symbolically burnt, not because it's chometz, but because it represents the tendency that we all have, which we all have to change, of looking for somebody else's faults. A very, very beautiful idea. Another very short, beautiful idea, which has to do with B'dikas Chometz, is this. When we do B'dikas Chometz, so we recite at night and the next morning, a statement, which we really should understand in English, although it's written in Aramaic, and that is, we say, Kol chamiro v'chamiyo, whatever chometz I found in my possession, liftel, it should become botel, it should be null and void, it should be as nothing, liftel v'levi ka'afro diyaro, and it should be like offer, like earth, like dirt, it should be considered like nothing. Now, that statement is halachically known as bitul. Bitul chometz, which is a verbal, mental attitude that one's supposed to have, that whatever chometz I have, whether I find it, whether I don't find it, it should all be botel ka'afra diyara. It should be like nothing. The Rishonim already asked the question. Mara, to some extent, struggles with this question. First Tosfos in Maseches Psochim. If we do bitul, and we have to do bitul, you have to say this verbal formula. And min hatorah, that's all you need. Right? Min hatorah, midaraisa, bitul, bialma, is all you need. So why then do we have to go and do the whole process of bedika, and search for chometz, and find the chometz, and burn the chometz? Why is bitul itself not enough? And the answer, of course, is that what you say in your heart, or the words that you say, we know, our words and our intentions are not perfect. And we can say 1,000 times, it's botel like offer, and we don't really mean it. We might change our minds. We might find what the Gemara calls a gluska yofa, a beautiful pastry, and in the middle of Pesach, and that'll make us reconsider and change our minds about our initial mental decision, intent to make it all botel. But that's why, besides the bitul, we have bedika and biur, so that we actually physically get it out of our possession. To give an indication of how weak our verbal commitments are, and therefore how we can't just rely on the verbal commitment, think about what we say. It should be botel ka'afra. To be bofta like offer, like dirt. We use this phrase, ka'offer, every time we say Shemona Esrei. When you say, Elokai, Nesar L'Shomim Eiro, so we all say, God, preserve me from a malicious tongue, etc. V'nafshi ke'ofor la'kol tihiyah. We say every day. At the time we say it, we probably mean it. May my nefesh be like ofor for everyone. No one should consider me to be anything important. Everyone should just consider me to be humble. Ofor v'efor. All right, how many people really mean that? How many people, you know, if just after having said that, they take three steps back and someone says, excuse me, you're in my way, get upset. We all get upset. We just said, v'nafshi ka'ofa l'kolti. Yeah, we just said, I should be like Ofer, I should be like a humblest person. So we see how really reliable and worthwhile our commitment to be like Ofer is. It's not, you know, we're all capable of getting insulted, of wanting more covet. It's a human fault we all have. So one sees that statements, verbal statements about being like Ofer, v'nafshi ka'ofa l'kol tihiyah, don't count for much. And that's why we understand that when we say the chomet should be like Ofer, you know, we may mean it for the moment, but we have to do more than that. We have to do bedika and biur too. Finally, I want to share with you another thought, a brief thought. In the very beginning of the Seder, we do karpas. And we take a vegetable and dip it into salt water. And there are reasons why we do it, but I'd like to offer you a reason that you may never have heard about. The one thing that the Haggadah does not talk about, Haggadah talks about how we went into Mitzrayim, Avodim, Hoyinu, and how bitter it was, and how terrible it was. That's in Haggadah plenty. And Haggadah tells us how we were freed from Mitzrayim, about the Geula, about the Kriyas Yamsuf, about the Exodus. It's all in there. But the Haggadah doesn't say anything about what did we do to deserve being sent to Mitzrayim in the first place. You know? What terrible sin did the Jewish people do that brought us down to Mitzrayim? This is a question, really, Maharal Prague and maybe others before him asked this question. What did we go down to Mitzrayim for also? And we know it was from the Brisbane Absorium, Hashem told Avraham that we would go down. But basically it's a punishment. Years, hundreds of years of suffering. What did we do to deserve that? Well, if one knows the story, and everyone here knows the story, how did we get to Mitzrayim? What started it all off? Yosef was sent to visit his brothers by his father, and his brothers sold him into slavery, and he ended up in Mitzrayim, and the whole story. What's a symbol of that story? What did the brothers do? They took the kasonis, they took Yosef's coat, special coat, and they dipped it into blood. They took it and dipped it into blood. And they showed their father, these are Yosef's clothing. This is. So that dipping of the, and the Torah uses the words, dipping, they dipped it into blood. That taking an object and dipping it into a liquid is the symbol of what got us into Mitzrayim in the first place. The fact that we sold our brother down the river. We sold him to Mitzrayim. We betrayed him. The sinasachim, brotherly hatred. That's what got us into Mitzrayim. That's what continues to get us various types of suffering, because we don't have the proper respect and love for each other. So dipping something into something, that's the symbol of it all, and that's karpas. And more so, if you look in the translation, karpas, if you find the word karpas, to my knowledge, once in the whole of Tanakh, and that's in Megillas Esther, where a description is made of all the beautiful, luxurious upholstery and carpentry and curtains that existed in Ahasuerus's palace. And it says, Chur karpas usecheles. So karpas, besides being petrushka or celery or whatever you use in the karpas of the Seder, the word karpas in Megillas Esther means some fine cloth. And indeed, what Yosef's coat was made of was kisones pasim, karpas. So that the word karpas, which means a vegetable, some suggest the actual meaning of karpas is celery, but whatever, it's a vegetable, but the word karpas also means a cloak, a fine cloak. So it's a symbol of Yosef's fine cloak. We're not going to dip it into blood, so we dip it into salt water, but the symbol is the same thing. And we do it right at the beginning of the Seder, before Maggid, before we go into the rest of the story, because this is the source of it all. And Karpas Pisan is a symbol of the Jewish sin, which is still Ba'ochreinu, which is we're still struggling to overcome, and which causes us Golos and the failure to get the final Geula. These just three Vertlach simple ideas that I think are very, very interesting. I'd like to share with you an approach to the Haggadah Shel Pesach, which can be found in the Sefer Meshe Chochma at the beginning of Parshat Vo'era. And to my knowledge, I haven't seen yet a Haggadah Shel Pesach Meshe Chochma. I'm sure somebody will do it. Take all of Meir Simcha's writings and put them into a Haggadah. But this is where it's to be found, in his commentary on Parshas Vo'era. And I chose this particular approach for many reasons. First of all, the greatness of Meir Simcha, it's not even for me to say, just fantastic, both in Talmudic scholarship and Or Sameach, and it's the name of his sefer, and in terms of his understanding of Chumash, and really the Hashkofa, which comes out of a study of his Sforim, fantastic. That's one reason. But the other reason is that this particular approach gives me an opportunity to describe the whole Seder. The whole Seder, meaning the Seder Shel Pesach, and also the whole Seder, the whole order. Seder means order. There's all sorts of jokes about, you know, once a year the Jews have a Seder. The rest of the year we're chaotic, we're hefka, we're totally disorderly. But one night a year we have order, Seder. And I'd like to speak about the order. And of course the order revolves around what I call, jokingly, the magic number four. The number four pervades Pesach in many ways. There are four cups of wine, there are four sons, there are many, many less obvious sets of four. But why do we have four cups of wine? So our Gemara, Talmud Bavli, does not discuss why, but the Rashbam, who's Rashi's grandson, who's the main commentator on the last parts of Maseches Pesachim, so he quotes a Yerushalmi, it's to be found in various Midrashim, that the, and everyone knows this, and school children know this too, but you'll see the deeper significance of this, and that is that the four kosos correspond to the four lishonos shel geula. They correspond to the four language, four verbs used in the Torah, where God says, I will bring the Jews out of Mitzrayim. He says that in four different verbs, and those four different verbs correspond to the four kosos. What are the four verbs? So if you look in Chumash in Parshas Vo'era, it's in Shemos Perek Vov, Pasuk Vov. Number one, in Pasuk Vov, Hashem says, V'hotzeisi Hashem, I'm going to take you out. Number two, he says, V'hitzalti, I'm going to rescue you. Number three, he says, V'go'alti, I will redeem you. And number four, he says, "V'lokachti eschem li'la'om." I will take you to me as a people. So, v'hotzeisi, v'hitzalti, v'go'alti, v'lokachti. Those are the four verbs. They mean more or less the same thing: to take a person out of slavery. And the four cups correspond to the four kosa, four lishonos shel geula. The man Simcha is bothered. You know, all right, there's four here, there's four there. What's the meaning of it all? Why are the four, what way these four cups correspond to these four lishonos shel geula? So here's how he starts off. He says, let me first explain to you these four languages, these four lishonos, these four forms, these four verbs are not exactly synonymous. In fact, in our language, in Lashon Kodesh, it's probably true in every language, synonyms are similar in meaning but never exactly the same. Simcha and Soson, all right? Pachad and Yira. Pachad and Yira both mean fear. Simcha and Soson both mean joy. But they don't mean precisely the same kinds of fear or the same kinds of joy. And our Mefarshim throughout the ages often suggest what are the subtle differences between synonyms. And that's whenever you study Tanakh, you have to ask yourself the question, how does Sason differ from Simcha? How does Pachat differ from Yira? And some of the Mefarshim, especially those who lived the 19th century, the Malbim, Shem Shupol Hirsch, Ksafa HaKabbalah, they specialize in finding these differences, these subtle differences of nuance between synonyms. So Meir Simcha says, let me explain to you the subtle differences between the Hotseisi and the Hitzalti and the Goalti and the Lokachti. Hotseisi means to, in English we would say, to extract, to take something out from its envelope. Something is inside of something else, it's surrounded, it's enveloped, it's in something else, so you take it out, right? As the pasuk says, "Vahotzei lahotzi goy mikerev goy." I'm going to take one nation out from inside the other nation. Often, the Medrash will use as a mashal for the Jews coming out of Mitzrayim an ubor, a fetus, a baby being delivered from its mother's womb. The mother's womb is a perfect example of something which totally envelops the baby, and the baby is extracted. That's Vahotzeisi, number one. Now, the Jewish people were totally, totally enveloped by Mitzrayim. We were sunk in 49 degrees of Tumah. We were totally enveloped. We were totally physically enslaved. We had no freedom, no freedom whatsoever. But in a spiritual sense, we were also totally surrounded by a culture which was, the people of Mitzrayim were known as Shetufei Zima. They were steeped in promiscuity. It was a very, very perverted society, and it surrounded us completely. So Vahotzeisi means God says, I will extract you from that. You're totally surrounded in something. I will extract you from that. Now, how can a person or any object be extracted from something which surrounds it totally? Only if it has kept itself distinct, right? If you have something which is, you put butter into a hot mashed potatoes, you can't get the butter out because the butter is assimilated, physically assimilated throughout the mashed potatoes. If you take something hard and distinct and surround it with something, then it can be taken out. The Jewish people, to their credit, as much as they were surrounded by the alien culture of Mitzrayim, they retained their distinction. As we say in the Haggadah, Shehayu Mitzuyanim Sham. Mitzuyanim means, nowadays the word Mitzuyan is used as a grade in school. Mitzuyan, excellent. But the real meaning of the word Mitzuyan means distinct. Distinct, very special, very distinct, very, very discreet. Is a word in English, discreet, which doesn't only mean confidential, it also means something separate and unique. So we were Mitzuyanim Sham. So therefore, God could take us out. We wouldn't melt into the surround. We were separate but surrounded. That's Vahotzeisi. So the word has very special meaning. It means to extract from a surrounding envelope. But in the sense of Mitzrayim, of the Jews in Mitzrayim, it conveys the idea of the fact that we were Mitzuyanim Sham, which is also symbolized in Shaloshinu Es Levushon, Shaloshinu Es Bideyeh. We didn't change our clothes. So we looked distinct. We didn't wear the fashions of Mitzrayim. We wore distinctive Jewish clothing. That's number one. Number two, we have V'Hitzalti. Hitzalti means to rescue. Now, rescue means someone is being pursued by a rodef, being pursued by a gunman, an attacker, and along comes a hero and rescues you. But suppose you're being pursued by one attacker, and across the street there's another attacker, and someone takes you from one enemy and delivers you to the other enemy. Has he rescued you? Can you speak of the Hitzalti? No, because you're not safe yet. Hitzalti means I've taken you away from an enemy from a threat and placed you in some place where you're now secure. The Jewish people had a pursuer. That was Mitzrayim. If they were taken from Mitzrayim and placed among their brothers and sisters and cousins and fellow Jews, if they were secure there, then you can say Behitzalti. But if the Jewish people were no better than the Egyptians, and if the Jewish people were full of, just spoke about, brotherly hatred, if the people were in discord, if the people betrayed each other, so you can't speak of a Hatzalah from Mitzrayim, because you went from the frying pan into the fire. You went from your Goyish enemy to your Jewish brother whom you couldn't trust. However, God was able to do Vehitzalti, meaning by rescuing us from the Mitzrayim, He brought us back to the Jewish people, and one of the traits of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim were Shelo Gilu Mistorin Shelohem. They didn't even tell each other's confidences. They didn't even betray each other's secrets. So they were full of achva, of brotherly support. So then you can speak of a hitzalti, of being rescued from Mitzrayim to a place where you're secure. As the Shalom, the Jews were not to be trusted. Then what do you gain from leaving Mitzrayim? You gain a you get freed from a physical enemy, and you go into an enemy who'll sell you down the river. But that wasn't the Jewish people. Not only did they not change their levush, and not change their clothing and remain distinct so that they could be bahotzesi, but they also welcomed each other and treated each other with respect and with derech eretz and with ava v'yachva, etc. So therefore there could be a v'hitzalti. Then there is v'go'alti. V'go'alti means to redeem, and in the Torah we find the verb v'go'alti many times, usually in connection with a redemption from slavery. A slave is nigal. The word ge'ula is often used, the substitute word often used in Chazal for that is pidyon. Pidyon means to redeem someone who is enslaved. So ge'ula means to take someone out of slavery, bedafka slavery. If you're taken out of some other tzara, you can't say the ge'ula, you can't say the ge'alti. The ge'alti is from slavery. Now, the Jewish people were certainly enslaved in Mitzrayim. And we know something, Chazal taught us something about the psychology of slavery. And Chazal say, Avda behefkeira nichole. And that has halachic significance. That an eved, a slave, a true slave, likes to be a slave. Because he's free. It's a strange thing. A slave doesn't have to decide what to wear, what to do, doesn't have to make decisions, doesn't have to worry about, you know, did I do the right decision, the wrong decision. He just got to follow orders. And it's amazing how many people like that. There's a certain sense of hefkeiros to that. No responsibilities. No responsibilities. And that's why people love slavery. There was a book written long, long ago by a famous psychologist who was one of our Anshei Shlomeinu, who was a Jew, Eric Fromm. The title of the book was Escape from Freedom. And that title says it all. He says that there are people who want to escape from freedom, because freedom is a burden. Freedom means responsibility. Freedom equals responsibility. If you're free, you have responsibilities. If you're not free, there's no responsibilities. You just got to follow orders, which is for many people easier. This is the nature of a slave. The Jewish people, however, were willing not to be slaves. They were willing to be free. That's why the fact that the Jewish people were willing to be free, meaning they didn't seek to escape their freedom. They knew full well that with freedom come certain burdens of responsibility, and they wanted that. So that's v'go'alti. And finally, the lokachti is to take, but it's not just to take, it's the lokachti eschem li la'om. And here we come to something that we often forget. And it sounds very nationalistic, Zionistic, but these are the thoughts of Rav Meir Simcha. And he says, "Lokachti li la'om, lokachti eschem li la'om," means I'm going to take you and you're going to become a nation with a sense of nationalism, a sense of being a nation, not just a group of people who were slaves and not free, not just a community, but a nation community. and he uses the words La'am Nimusi Ulu'umi. You're going to become a nation with Nimusim, which means with certain norms, with a certain culture, Ulu'umi, with a pride of nationhood, B'mishtar V'seder, with arrangements, with laws, with order, with a framework, with a judicial system, with a political system. That's Lakati Eschem Li La'am. I'm going to take you as a nation. So we have these four Lashonos Shel Geula, and they mean four different things, all very important, and all very important to think about, especially on Pesach. Our not being assimilated, our being, having our own identity in spite of our environment, the fact that we are rescued from the Goyim to be safe among our own people, hopefully, the fact that we don't have a slave mentality, we accept and welcome freedom, and fourth, that we have a sense of being one nation, of being a people with a system, with a set of laws, with a set of nimusim, a set of behaviors that are ours. Now, Rav Meir Simcha says, let's take a look at the whole Haggadah Shel Pesach and organize it. All right. Now, you can organize it various ways. You can organize the Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, etc., etc. That's maybe 12 or 14 different divisions. Rav Meir Simcha divides it into four divisions corresponding to the four kosos. Now, the first kos is recited when? Over Kiddush. All right? So, the first thing we do, Kadesh, is Kiddush. Kiddush corresponds to V'hotzesi, because V'hotzesi means to extract a unique something from a surrounding something. That's what Kiddush is all about. The word L'Kadesh means to specify, to appoint, to make something special. Hareyat Nikudesh Esli. Asher Kiddushonu B'mitzvosav. The word for Kiddush, it's interesting, I always emphasize in it, whenever I teach, there are many, many words that we use in Hebrew all the time, and we translate into English, and the translation is wrong, absolutely wrong. Kadosh is usually translated holy. That's not what the word Kadosh means. Kadosh means special. Bracha is usually translated blessing. All right, it's not quite what bracha means, or else it wouldn't make sense for us to bless God. It's all shmooze in itself. But Kiddush, L'Kadesh, Kitshonu v'mitzvosav, that's talking about what Bahotsesi is talking about. The fact that we are special and distinct. What makes us special and distinct, Asher Kitshonu v'mitzvosav v'tzivanu, what makes us distinct are our mitzvos. That's what makes us distinct. Other people don't have our mitzvos. So, Kiddush corresponds beautifully to Bahotsesi. Then, let's go on to the next kos. Alright, if the Kiddush, we go, say Manishtana, Magid, the whole Avodim Hayinu, the whole story, long, long story, and the kids bring out their sheets, and they say all their Vertlach, and the father hopefully has a chance to say a few things too, maybe even the grandfather's allowed to say a few words, and then you end up with a second kos. Now, together with the second kos, you also say Hallel, but not all of Hallel. I'm sorry. The second kos is the Hallel, right, before the first half of Hallel. Right? Okay. The Rav Meir Simcha goes a little out of order. Excuse me. The order is V'hotzesi, V'hisalti, V'go'alti, V'lokachti. The second kos is indeed over a Hallel. But the second kos, Rav Meir Simcha, doesn't correspond to verb number two. This is the only part of it that's not exactly 100%, you know, systematic. But the second kos corresponds to verb number three, all right, to the Go'alti Eshem. Because what makes a person accept his freedom? What makes a person really reject the slave mentality? Well, I explained the slave mentality, the Gemara says, is behefker anichale. He likes hefker. He likes to do whatever he pleases. That's a slave. Where does that come from? So the Gemara has another interesting phrase, which is called in Aramaic, avdo les lei chayes. Chayes ches yud yud samach, which means the Hebrew word yichus. An eved has no lineage. An eved has no yichus. He has no sense of heritage, of ancestry. Right? If you read about the American slaves, the Negro slaves, one of the tragedies of Uncle Tom's Cabin or any account of that slavery is that on the slave block, the person could go up there and say, I want the kid and the sister, but not the brother and not the mother, and breaking apart families. That's the nature of being, that's a tragedy of slavery, breaking apart families. So when Eved has no yichus, and Eved has no sense of my father, my grandfather, look now about how the African Americans are trying to figure out where they came from in Africa so that they can have some sense of history. But normally, an Eved lost his history. Jewish people have a history. And that's what goes against our being an Eved. That's why we can be free, because we have this sense, oh, I'm not just a person. I'm a person with a father and a grandfather and a grandmother and a great-grandmother all the way back to Avraham and Sarah. Where do we say that? Where do we emphasize that theme? In the first two paragraphs of Hallel, which we say with the second kos. B'tzeis Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, Beis Yaakov Mayam Loweis, where we recount the essence of our history, where we say we have a yichus, we have a lineage, we have a heritage. So the second kos, which is said on the first parts of Hallel, that corresponds to the verb v'go'alti, which has to do with being free from slavery. The third kos we recite on the Birchas HaMazon, on the benching. You do many times during the year. You bench on the kos. Here, Emes Emphas says something that's really, really precious. The third kos corresponds to the second Lashon. The second Lashon is V'hitzalti. I will rescue you from the Goyim. I'll have you Jews live each among each other, and it will be fine. There will be Shalom among Yisroel. Why is a person not b'shalom with a fellow Jew? Where does it all come from? It comes from envy. Kina, tava. Because I think that you have something that I should have. Whether that something is money, or possessions, or good looks, or position of honor, whatever it is. You have something, I would like it. That's ultimately what's at the root of sinas achim. That was at the root of the brothers and Yosef. If a person benches and recites Birchas HaMazon, so what is that doing? Yeah, fine, you're thanking God for the food you ate. But when you recite Birchas HaMazon, you're acknowledging that whatever you have, the bread or on the side of the matzah, is from God. All right. And if a person truly believes that whatever he has or she has is from God, and there's no, you can't be jealous of someone else. How can you be jealous of someone else? You have whatever God wanted you have to have. She has whatever God wanted her to have. There's no room for kinah. So Birchas HaMazon is ultimately a statement of, it all comes from Hashem. Whatever I have is what I'm supposed to have, no more, no less. Whatever he has is what he's supposed to have, no more, no less. And therefore we can live with Shalom together. So Birchas HaMazon is what guarantees the Hitzalti. I could be rescued from the Goyim, live among the Jews, and I'm okay. And finally, the third kos is recited over the rest of Hallel. And the rest of Hallel is really a national anthem. All right? Even mo'asu habonim hoysol l'rosh pina. That's a national anthem. The stone which the builders rejected has now become the cornerstone of the whole building. That reflects we, the Jewish people, gone through whatever we've gone through, but now we are Rosh Pinah. And many other psukim in the second part of Hallel, which emphasize that we are a nation, and we're a nation with a national anthem, with a sense of what Rav Meir Simcha calls a sense of l'umiyut, a sense of being a nation, being a people. That's what we celebrate in the fourth kos with the rest of Hallel. So in this beautiful explanation, the four kosos are placed at strategic points in the Haggadah, because those points in the Haggadah correspond to the four verbs, the foolish shango shel geula. And what it all has to do with, really, is the fact that we are a distinct people. Am levodad yishkon. We are a people unto ourselves in so many ways. And this is why Meir Simcha says, why do we have the four kosos on wine? You know, why not on water, on borscht, all right, on beer, on something else? Why yayin? So he says, because yayin is the ultimate symbol of our distinctiveness, of our specialness. And he brings Medrash, quite well-known Medrash, having to do with Purim, not with Pesach, but which indicates this. Because the Medrash wants to know, how did Haman persuade Achashverosh to kill all the Jews? All right. What was in it for Achashverosh? Some money, all right. So the Medrash says that here's what Haman was able to do. Haman said to Achashverosh, you know what kind of people these are, these Jews? You take a glass of wine, a cup of wine, and a fly, a zvuv, falls into the wine, you know what they'll do? You know, they'll scoop out the fly with a spoon, throw the fly out, and drink the rest of the wine. I mean, you might not do that, but halachically, no problem. The fly's there, scoop it out, throw it out, and eat the rest of the wine. But if you, King Achashverosh, if you touch that wine, they won't go near it. That's the kind of people you are. All right, that's the kind of people you're dealing with. And of course, Achashverosh said that was true, and we had problems from Achashverosh. But you see from that beautiful medrash that wine exemplifies our sense of distinctiveness. All right, Gozruel Yenom Mishum Benoseim, the Gemara says. The reason why we don't sit and drink wine together with Goyim is because that will lead to intermarriage. That will lead to assimilation. You party with them, you marry them. So therefore, Yayin becomes the example of our separateness and our distinctiveness. So this is a beautiful, beautiful scheme, or schema of Rav Meir Simcha, where you have the four Lashono Shel Geula, which correspond to the four Kosos, and the four Kosos are placed at four distinct parts in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, one by Kiddush, which emphasizes that we are Kedosha, meaning we are unique and separate, the other by the first Hallel, which emphasizes that we have a sense of heritage, and therefore we're not slaves, we have Yichus, and every Jew has Yichus, we're all B'nai Avraham V'Sarah, and B'nai B'nos Avraham V'Sarah, and therefore we can claim our freedom. And number three, Birchas HaMazon is the foundation of Emunah, that everything comes from Hashem, and therefore there's no basis for Kinnah, no basis for anything but Ahavas Yisrael. And finally, we are a people, we are an Am, and that's the second part of Hallel and the fourth kos. Rav Meir Simcha does not speak about the fifth kos and the fifth Lashon Shel Geula. Maybe that's something we'll save for another time. Thank you.